This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Ride Along Radio. I'm your host, author and writing coach, Kevin Johns.
And I'm also your host, blogger and writer, Catherine Brunel.
Catherine, who do we have on the show today?
Today is another episode where we get to piggyback with the Ottawa International Writers Festival. And basically, we are going to be showcasing a conversation between Jeffrey Deaver, who is a huge international bestseller crime writer, and Sean Wilson, who's the creative director of the Writers Festival. They're having a conversation, and there's loads of good advice to writers in this conversation. So I'm really, really happy we get to bring it to you guys.
And I think this conversation continues kind of a long tradition that we have on this show, and that I've kind of noticed all over the place of writers sharing their knowledge. It seems like, I don't know if other professions are the same way, but it really seems like writers, perhaps more so than others, are eager to help others out and to share what they've learned, like Jeff does in this interview.
Exactly. I have noticed that every interview I've gone to at the Ottawa, every like conversation I've gone to at the Ottawa International Writers Festival, the writers at some point in the evening start dishing out writing advice. They tell stories, they tell their insights, they tell their takeaways from it. I don't think we can help ourselves. For some reason, there's something about being a writer, you're like, gotta help out the others. I don't know why.
I wonder if it's because so many people want to write. You know, I don't think like everyone wants to be a professional hockey player, but I think, you know, there's those stats you always hear of like 40% of all North Americans have a novel in them that they want to write someday or something. You know, I think it's kind of one of those things that's attractive to a wide breadth of people. And so there's a real thirst for that knowledge.
I also think, you know what, perhaps other professions and groups, I mean, we're not competing with each other, right? That's one thing. It's not like if you succeed, I can't succeed. It doesn't work that way. If somebody likes a book, they want other authors of the same style. So we're not competing. So that's a really huge thing. And then also, when you get through something difficult, I have noticed personally with myself, and I've noticed with other people providing courses and information, you want to tell others your takeaway, you know, like you want to help others. Either not have to deal with what you did, although everybody deals with what you did, but also just know that other people are going through it and maybe see some strategies. I mean, I think we have this compulsion, and because it's not competition, it's actually complementary. What's the harm, right? So you get it. It's fascinating because probably a large amount of the audience at the Ottawa International Writers Festival are readers. They're just readers. But I bet they enjoy hearing the behind the scenes too.
Well, I mean, I know I never made films, but I always loved listening to audio commentaries and hearing the directors and the actors and the writer, you know, taking you behind the scenes. And, you know, it's always so interesting to learn a little bit of how the magic comes together.
Do you know, okay, this is totally an aside, but it's a little nitpick of mine. Okay. You know, like the audio track bonus you can get when you like buy a television series or a movie and you get like behind the scenes commentary. I love it when the writers give commentary. I love it. But when the actors give commentary, they're just like, like, why? Just because they are the people who, you know, put the actions and faces, they're not the story creators.
It's so true. You know what? There are some directors as well who are just terrible. Like, I remember there was a Tim Burton audio commentary, and I thought it was going to be this fascinating thing. You know, this guy is so quirky, makes these crazy movies. And it was basically like 2 hours of him being like, this scene was shot on a set on a Tuesday. No, it might have been a Wednesday, you know, I totally agree with you. The writers are where it's at, you know, and rather apropos to this podcast.
Exactly. So why don't we just cut over to it right now? Because I think, guys, you're going to really enjoy this conversation. There's some really useful takeaways. One I thought was fascinating. We'll talk about it more in the comeback, but I thought the discussion on creating your villain was really excellent. And the discussion on outlining your book and why you should outline your book almost convinces me to do it. I'll tell you.
Wow, that must have been convincing.
I know.
Well, let's cut to that interview now.
Hey, I'm Nikki Cameron, and I'm here tonight with Nina Dristek. And we're going to be talking about one of the Writers' Fest events. Nina was just at an evening event over at Christchurch Cathedral. Nina, do you want to tell me a little bit about what you saw tonight?
Sure. Tonight we had a one-on-one discussion with the crime fiction and mystery writer Jeffrey Deaver, who's most well-known for his book, The Bone Collector.
Jeffrey Deaver is an international number one best-selling author. His novels have appeared on bestseller lists around the world, including the New York Times, Times of London, Sydney Morning Herald, and the LA Times. His books are sold in 150 countries and have been translated into over 25 languages. And if awards, critical acclaim, and massive success aren't impressive enough, well, he also played a corrupt reporter on As the World Turns. So that's pretty impressive. A native of Chicago, we're thrilled to welcome Jeffrey Deaver to Ottawa as the Blackhawks prepare to battle the Ducks in the NHL playoffs. Let's give a warm Ottawa welcome to Jeffrey Deaver.
This might be illuminating to those of you who may be aspiring writers or writers and are just interested in this. I take a very detached view of my books. My job is to be the airline pilot who gets behind the controls of the airplane and looks out and says, oh, beautiful sunset, beautiful sunrise. Who cares? My job is to fly the airplane safely and make sure my passengers are happy, i.e. the readers. Horrific thunderstorm, high winds, terrible for everybody else. I fly through this all the time. I don't care. My job is to get my passengers to the destination safely. And I really do take that detached approach when it comes to my my characters. I have found that if I am too attached emotionally to a character, I'm probably doing something wrong. And my job is to make sure that I scare the hell out of you, not myself. And so I would simply say that a character like Antioch March, the bone collector, the fellow who was in the Broken Window, having written 37 novels, I can't remember the name of the villain, created 37, well, probably 50 villains, because often I have two villains in a book, can't remember his name. But my job is to think, okay, will this captivate you and make your palms sweat? And I have to add one more thing, if I may. Think back to a bad TV movie, and I have had several TV movies made. I don't think they were too bad, but I've seen plenty of bad TV movies, because we authors look for any excuse not to write. We channel surf whenever we can to avoid the writing process. But a bad made-for-TV movie, who's the villain? He's got my hairstyle, except a ponytail. Right away, we know he's a bad guy, and he wears a black leather jacket. And he's always the henchman, the adjutant to the ultimate bad guy who runs an oil company or a pharmaceutical company. And the writer of those bad made-for-TV films has wasted no energy, invested nothing in creating a living, breathing villain. But we need to do that. Our villains have to be as real as our heroes. Not only do they have to be as real, but they have to be larger than life. They actually have to have more skills than our villain, so that when the hero defeats them, which we hope happens, then we feel the hero has not battled a straw man or a cardboard character, but has actually defeated somebody worthy of the victory. So that's kind of how I approached the bad guys.
The objective here in all of your 30-something novels is one that it's to entertain. Mm-hmm. The way you're entertaining us is by coming up with these wonderful villains who are doing horrible things. Have you ever had to pull something because it came too close to what's happening in real life? I mean, you know, you're listening to people, you're watching the news, you're going to be inspired, but have there been times when your fictional world is just too close, that it just was not acceptable to keep things in, or have you always been able to just keep it as is?
Sure. My job, as you say, Sean, is to entertain. These books have to be fun. I'll tell you right up front, I'm never going to kill Lincoln Rhyme, I'm never going to kill Catherine Dance. I may put them through hell and torture them off and on, psychically more than physically, but my job is to give you a fun time. You're not going to have an ambiguous ending for one of my books, because stories have to end with a sense of definitive conclusion. You are never going to see in my books a child injured. You're never going to see an animal injured. You're never going to see sexual violence in my books, because I want you to get on the roller coaster. We were talking about amusement parks before, knowing that you're going to get off at the end of the ride safely. You'll have some excitement along the way. You'll be a little nervous, you'll be a little scared, your palms will sweat. I hope you miss that bus stop that you were meant to get off, and you find you're 50 miles away from where you intended to be because you're so engrossed in the book. But they should be very fun. And I will leave the serious writing to people like, I think of George Pelicanos, wonderful writer, who worked on the TV show The Wire. That's real life. And I love those shows. I love Breaking Bad. I loved House of Cards, both the original British version and the new version. But that's kind of grim. And, I go to that type of entertainment or art, if you will, for one reason, but I don't do that. You're never going to run into a villain like Andy Ockmarch. I guarantee it right now. You are never going to run into a villain as we met in The Vanished Man, who is an illusionist, psychotic illusionist, magician, who uses sleight of hand and quick change in these tricks, David Blaine or David Copperfield or Harry Houdini tricks, to get close to his victims. You'll never meet somebody like that, but I think you'll have a fun time reading the book. And so that's the kind of split from reality that I go for. You know, these are fun entertainments. Watch it loosely and be really angry with me, but it should be fun.
What I thought was really interesting about the discussion is how much responsibility he feels towards his readers.
So did you feel that there were a lot of his fans in the audience? Like, were a lot of people... Deliverers? No, that doesn't work.
Deliverers?
Trying to make a Justin Bieber joke.
Say Deliverers. Oh, I was thinking Believers. Like, yeah. Deliverers.
Like you said, when someone writes mysteries, they just pump them out. So I've read probably 25 books from one author. Like, yeah. That's been the background of vacations and plane trips and before bed. So, yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a relationship there.
Definitely. Oh, I think it definitely creates a sense of relationship. And it also, there was another great story that Jeffrey Deaver told us, which, again, relationship to fans. I think when you are so big and you have characters, like detectives who appear in all of your novels again and again, people develop relationships not just with you as the writer, but also with the characters in your books.
Yes.
He probably has like a million great stories. But one of my favorite stories that he told tonight was about a woman who approached him and asked him, well...
Another story. I was at during one of my book events some years ago, and a woman came up to me and said, well, Mr. Deaver, I do like your books. I enjoy them. But, you know, this latest one where that woman was stabbed, it was so visceral, so gory. I had a lot of trouble with it. And I said, oh, what scene was that? And she said, I don't know. It's like in the early part of the book, and the villain, she mentioned the villain, stabbed her to death. It was like, we saw 17, 18 times blood everywhere, the knife just stabbing her. Oh, it was horrific. I said, you know, I don't remember that scene. She was a little confused. And she said, well, it's right here. And I gave her the book. She said, well, could you find it? So she pointed out the chapter where the woman the victim, goes into a door of a, I think it was an office building, it may have been an apartment, but, and we know the killer's on the other side, and we know he's armed with a knife. That's his weapon of choice. And she said, well, it must be later. And she put me through the book. The next time we saw that person, she was in a body bag being wheeled out. And she had indeed been stabbed that many times, but all we saw was her walk into the door and her coming out in a body bag. And the reference by the coroner, the fact she'd been stabbed brutally 17 times. Gore is bad. Suspense is good. I created suspense. And so she said, you mean I'm the one I should be worried about? I said, let's put it this way. You're my partner in this process. Thank you very much.
So the most interesting stuff for me listening to it was hearing him talk about how much work he puts into his writing. Like, we all know that writers spend a lot of time writing their books. Like, some writers take 10 years to write a novel. But he's been writing for 25 years, and he's got about 30 books.
Holy
crap. So that's, like, pretty fast, right? It takes a lot of stamina and a lot of effort. But he puts a lot of planning into it. He does the one writer's technique where he plots out every single event on the corkboard and make sure he knows every scene, every event that's going to take place so that he can, like, keep himself writing and have an original plot. And it's easier to rewrite or, like, to ditch it when it's a bunch of notes.
Right, that's very sensible. It's true. I would never throw out 600 pages.
Yeah, well, I don't know. First, you have to write 600 pages.
I would never write 600 pages.
Well, you got to try.
I'll tell you two reasons the outline is important, if I may. When the outline's done, I know where the story's going to go. So I'm never blocked. I never have writer's block. If I were writing just from the beginning set piece through to the end of the story, I might come to the middle of the book and not know where to go. But because I know the outline, I might get to a point where I wake up and I have to write a violent scene. It's a killing of some sort. But maybe it's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. Birds are singing. I don't necessarily want to kill somebody viciously that day. I'll tell you when I want to viciously kill somebody. Did I mention that we writers look for any excuse not to write? And what's our number one reason for not writing? Channel surfing. So let's say my cable TV goes up, and I call the cable company, and they say, we'll have a repairman there at 8 in the morning. Now, also, being a writer, I don't get up at 8 in the morning for anything except the cable repair guy. Who doesn't come at 8 or 9 or 10 or 1 or 2 or 3 or 4? He shows up at 5 or 6 p.m. He looks at the cable box and says, oh, well, I know the problem. I've got to order another part. I'll be here tomorrow morning at 8. Those are the days I want to viciously murder someone. And guess what the name of the victim is? He works for. But I don't have to do that. So I can write the beginning of the book at the end of the book at the beginning, whatever I want. It's a much more efficient way to write. But there's another reason outlines are important. Again, I don't want a show of hands. I just want you to ask yourself, have you ever read a book that should not have been written? Uh-huh. Okay, and some bold souls are raising hands because we all have done that. Just because you have an idea and a word processor doesn't mean that you should make that book into print. You readers, are owed everything. I get to make up stuff for a living. It doesn't get any better than that. And yes, I don't work in Washington, D.C. Yeah. I could have said Ottawa, but I didn't. Don't you appreciate that? Just in American politics only. But I get to make up things for a living. I really owe it to you to make sure you get the best book you can. And let's say I started writing that chapter one with a very exciting set piece. And I think if you do look through Solitude Creek, you'll see it's a really exciting opening scene. And that was easy to write. I knew it was going to be a horrific scene, easy to write. Then I write chapter 3 and introduce Kath and Dance. Chapter 4, introduce other characters, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Over the course of maybe 3 or 4 or 5 months, I can easily write 600 pages of prose. And then I get to the middle part of the book, and I don't know where it's going to go. and I don't know what the ending's going to be. And I really am stymied. I'm blocked. Well, you know, maybe that's because there is no middle of the book. Maybe it's going to be filled with cliches, like Catherine has a fight with her her captain, her superior. How often have we seen that? There's a she has a sidekick who is killed. How often have we seen that? There's a car chase. How often have we seen that? All these cliches. And then at the ending, I don't know how it's going to end. Maybe there's a character that steps out of the woodwork who's the actual killer, and we've never met that person before. And that's cheap, shoddy writing. When I'm faced with that, I have two options. One, I can do the morally courageous thing. Throw it all away. Throw it out. And not say chapter three, because it was a pretty good chapter three. Because if you write a pretty good chapter three in a bad book, think of the great chapter three you'll write in a really good book.
So Nina, what do you think the benefits are of going to an event like this if you haven't read the book and you don't plan on it? Like, where's the value for you?
I think the value in coming to an event like this is, one, for people who love crime fiction, I think it's great to get to know your authors because you do really form that connection with them. And coming and meeting them gives you another perspective on where they're coming from and, like, what their background is. And if you've only read, like, a Catherine Dance novel, you might not know that Jeffrey Deaver also wrote Bond, and he's also written a radio play, or, well, it was an Audible play, I guess, because it was for the online, or, like, the recorded publishing company. And then if you are a writer, I think these events are really important for writers, because I think a lot of people think writing happens in isolation, and they don't necessarily get outside of that box. And lots of people are trying to write genre fiction right now. I know people in Ottawa doing it. I know people around the world doing it. I've seen tons of blog posts and stuff about it, and I feel like someone like Jeffrey Deaver, who, you know, worked really, like, he was a lawyer before and then, like, cracked into writing crime fiction, has really good insights about how to go about it. And I mean, if you, you know, it's cheaper than taking a creative writing course to come and hear a writer talk.
And I often get the question, well, do I ever want to expand and do something other than fiction and the crime fiction that I write? And I basically go back to one of the most brilliant literary philosophers who ever lived, Dirty Harry. Clint Eastwood, who just before he blew somebody away with the 44 Magnum, the largest handgun known to man in whatever movie that was, said at least some point in that movie, a man's got to know his limitations. And I am very, very comfortable writing crime fiction. It's provided me with a good living. It's provided fans with a lot of enjoyable hours, so I'm told. But if I were to try to get it into my head, as some students have done when I teach my courses in writing, and have said, "Oh, Jeff, I want to write a book about a boys' and girls' boarding school, imaginary school in England, where there are vampires fighting with werewolves," and I say, "What's the title of the 50 Shades of Zombie Grey?" They say, I don't know what the title is yet. They kind of miss my point. B, I say, well, do you read Harry Potter? Do you read the Twilight series? Do you read the zombie books? And they say, no, but I know I can make a living doing that. And I say, no, that's not going to work. You have to write what you read. That's the only way you can sustain this, you know, admittedly somewhat difficult job of certainly making a living writing fiction. And you can't try to guess the curve. It doesn't work that way. You may be lucky enough to make money writing books. You may be lucky enough to do it for a living as a full-time job, as I have been blessed to do for many, many years now. But you can't try to step out of your genre. Whatever book genre you enjoy reading, you would be astonished at how much you've learned about crafting a book simply by reading. And clearly, you are all readers because you are here in Canada seeing me and not the hockey game. I cannot tell you. This is a story that will stay with me forever.
And we're back.
That was a great discussion. And, you know, we should have mentioned before we went to it, Jeff's the author of The Bone Collector, which was made into a big Hollywood movie. So this guy knows his stuff. You know, this is a successful author.
I mean, he's got so many books. He's been on so many bestselling lists. So, yes. As I was talking to Kevin during the break about how fascinating that his Jeffrey Deaver's outlining plan was, and his arguments as to why you should create a very thorough outline before writing. See, I don't do that sort of thing, right? I'm like just a feel your way through it kind of chick. But his argument that you'll spend less time developing a thorough outline than you will if you just write A to Z. Like by the time you get 3/4 through your outline, that'll be a couple weeks. Whereas 3/4 through a book, that's like 3/4 of a year. And if it's not going anywhere, you've just wasted a whole lot of time. Now, Kevin, you're the master planner, obviously. I mean, like, you're gifted. What do you think?
Well, you know what? Honestly, I think it's exactly what you said. It's something I'm good at. Like, as anyone who kind of knows me, I'm not really that good at, like, anything. Like, I don't bring a lot of skills to life. I struggle in most things, but I'm pretty good at plotting stories. And that's kind of my real interest in storytelling is in the arc, which is like part of why I have such a hard time with short stories. Because for me, you know, I'm so interested in seeing that character arc, in seeing that change happen over the course of kind of a long form story. So, I mean, that's not a very helpful answer, but, you know, the reality is I'm better at plotting than I am at, you know, character development or writing dialogue or whatever. It's just the strength in my writing. Who knows whether M school will be any good at all, but I can tell you I plotted all of M school while lying in bed one night, the whole book, and it hasn't really changed. So yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, some people rock at short stories. You know, like I was just reading an article about some of the top, it was an article of like, you know, 20 horror books you have to read or something like that, but it kept mentioning, like, it mentioned Lovecraft, it mentioned Ray Bradbury, and the author kept saying, you know, these guys were really much better at short stories than they were at novels, but you might want to check out this novel. But anyway, you know, some people are great at short stories, and I'm pretty good at plotting, so I mean, that's not a great answer, but I guess you know, the takeaway, dear listener.
I love what you say. Say it again.
Listener, recognize your strengths and then play to them, right? I mean, it's important to know what you're good at and what you're not good at, and take advantage of that. You know, if you plot really well or really quickly, then, you know that and take advantage of it.
So, guys, we hope you really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you again to the Ottawa International Writer Festival and Fomit Literary Magazine for letting us into your world and letting us use your audio.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
It's amazing. And guys, before we leave, just so you know, I am going to put a big chunk of unedited conversation between Sean and Jeffrey Deaver on the Write Along Radio website. So if you want to actually hear more from him, head over to our website, writealongradio.com, and check out the blog post with Jeffrey Deaver.
Awesome. And while you're over there checking out that additional bonus audio, make sure you sign up for our newsletter so you get all our fun, cool bonus features. And hey, subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, maybe even leave a rating and a review. That would be wonderful.
Yep. The whole thing just froze. I don't know what you said, but I think you covered the points very well.
I did a really, really great pitch.
Please do whatever Kevin told you to do.
For subscribing. There you go.
Yeah, subscribe. We haven't mentioned that in ages. We're on Stitcher, we're on iTunes, and we'd love your ratings. That would be a huge support. So thanks
Absolutely.
Very much. Absolutely. And I guess till next week, keep on writing.
# Write Along Radio.
I wrote The Bone Collector. Have you heard of that?
Yeah. Book? I mean, that was a movie with like Ashley Judd. Is that her name? Like, big famous.
Yeah, I should have said that in the intro.